it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Ripken, Fridays noon till 2 with Bob Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Riveted with Ryan. Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken, Nolan McGraw, other side of the glass. No Lamar Jackson in practice. No Devontae Walker at practice. No Roquan. Ben Cleveland was back after a personal day. Kadobia Awuzie was back. Marlon was back yesterday. We had Jonah Schaefer on earlier today, Ryan. He didn't think Marlon's going to go against the Rams. Mm-hmm. And they've got Puka Nacua and Davante Adams and, you know, Higby. I know he missed some days, but he should be ready to rock and roll. Kyren Williams running the ball. They have a good offensive line. I mean, how do you navigate? I mean, without Lamar, we know the offense is screwed and the offensive line stinks. But defensively, how do you keep it competitive? Because last week, Houston got opening kickoff. Ravens won a toss, deferred. They marched right down the field, and it was kind of downhill from there.
Yeah, I mean, well, it doesn't make you feel very confident when you see what Puka Nacua and Matt Stafford are doing as a tandem. But then also, you got to remember, then there's Davante Adams, which, you know, I know they say when they get to he's 32 years old, the decline for wide receivers, he ain't declining. He's still one of the best route runners out there. And Matthew Stafford's still slinging it as good as anyone in the NFL. But I think talking to what I like to do in the football world, I like to talk to some guys that have been around on the defensive side. So Sean Merriman, all-pro linebacker for the Chargers. Marilyn Terp, talked to him sure. The other day. And Sean was saying, you know, when players say they feel like the defense is close here and there, and people go, well, are you serious? You put up 44, or the team put up 44 points on you. He goes, yeah, it looks bad, but, you know, there are certain plays where you could hold the team and cut that number in half, but if one or two guys are out of position, it can make all the difference in the world. And, I mean, I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing some of these safety acquisitions for Baltimore, because I think they're looking at the secondary of a lot of the miscommunications that are kind of running around there. And I had Michael Brockers, almost a Raven, but yeah, a Ram for all those years and a Lion. And we were looking at film together on the defensive line, and I was ready for him to tell me, hey, you know, what are they doing all wrong? And he said occasionally, you know, guys in the wrong gap. But other times he goes, I hate to tell you guys, but they actually, besides getting to the quarterback, they're doing things okay, but there's a lot of miscommunication in the secondary. So where's the hope? If you can clean up a couple things, maybe you can shock a Rams team coming across country, but it's an uphill battle.
And not only that, they're coming off a loss.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be 10 days rested. They're staying in Baltimore.
Yep.
At Camden Yards, yeah, as a matter of fact.
Camden Yards is being used this October, Bob. That's, you know, right. There you go.
Yeah, there's never been a World Series game there, but there's going to be a Rams practice as they head overseas next week. But it's not even – say they're coming off beating San Francisco by 30.
Yeah.
Then maybe they're overlooking Baltimore, but nah, they're coming off an L, and they're seeing how tight things are going to be in the division, now trailing the 49ers, and Seattle's legit. I don't see them letting up at all. And McVay's a brilliant play caller, a beleaguered defensive coordinator in Zach Orr. Unless Stafford and Kyren Williams fumbles like he did in the game last week, I don't see it.
The only thing I'll say with this, the offensive-wise, Rams, I mean, they're a juggernaut. They can be a wagon. But defensively, of who the Ravens have faced this year, this will be the quote-unquote weakest defense that they have faced. I mean, Houston's offense, obviously, the Ravens got them right, but Houston's defense has been legit. Steve Spagnuolo with the Chiefs, that's a proven solid unit over times. The Lions, the Bills, like, you know, so for the Ravens, if there is one thing, maybe this offense can get a little bit of rhythm. And one thing for the Rams, yeah, they put away the Titans, which most teams have except the Cardinals. But yeah, so
they did the exact opposite.
But the other games, like the Rams actually, like they have been in some tight games. So I think that the Ravens could hang around, but it is going to be a super tall task.
And the defense as LA, as you said, Ryan, LA's not all that great, but they can get to the quarterback.
Yes, they can.
And with Verse and Brian Young, I don't know. I mean, that's why they play the games. There's your cliche. And as you talk to Lights Out, Sean Merriman, I mean, you watched the Maryland game as well against Washington. Keith Kavanaugh said Washington, it took them three quarters to get off the plane, if you will. But Maryland took the foot off the throttle, or did they? Because they couldn't move the chains. They don't have much of a running game as it is, but didn't even attempt to run. They couldn't burn clock. And, you know, once Washington started to get that offense cooking a little bit, you know, Terps had no answer. And we're sitting here talking about Farouk's drop in the last desperate drive, what, next to last play of the game, it turned out to be for Maryland. Should have never gotten to that point, even though he had another drop earlier that was kind of bad.
I mean, no, and here it was. Maryland was on the verge of that excitement reaching a whole different level this weekend.
They're ranked. They win that game.
No, no doubt. No really? Doubt. And then you have Nebraska, and then, yeah, UCLA, you know, pulled that upset against Penn State. But you're sitting here realistically, and there is a new belief in Maryland Terps football. And then when you lose that game the way that you did, everyone has that doubt. Here's the same Terps again, which they do have talent. But in those moments, you got to put them away. You didn't put them away. Now you just can't have that hangover game against Nebraska. And Nebraska's a good team, but you got to try to wipe that clean. You know, if you're a Terps fan, you're a Ravens fan, you have some doubts this weekend for sure.
Both underdogs at home. And real quick, Ron, before we get to the break, and we're going to hear from Mike Elias talking about the managerial search and veteran necessities there, and then Rockabacca, of course, shed some light on all of it. If it's the air quotes, same old Maryland, and now that we have cameras, air quotes, same old Maryland goes out and gets housed tomorrow after losing that game last week. I don't think it's same old Maryland. I truly believe, and it's not the, you know, the Terp Kool-Aid. I think they bounce back, and Mini Mahomes he's a stud, and he doesn't turn a ball over, and they've got a really good defense, good secondary. I don't see them laying an egg. No, I think they bounce back tomorrow.
I do believe that too, and that's what Sean Merriman Lights Out. That's what he thought as well. He goes, like, they got some beasts on the defensive side, and then Malik Washington, he's young, but we've seen the talent. Like they have ability on this ball club. But it's the narrative that you got to crush. And for Maryland, it's a great opportunity where people have some doubt with you. If you win that game against Nebraska, and then you go to UCLA and win, Indiana, who is a very good team, very good, then you're going to see that excitement and belief continue to come back.
And how about Washington, by the way, putting a blame on himself? I didn't make plays. Mm-hmm. I could have done well. I could have done better in certain situations. I mean, he's arguably the best freshman quarterback in the country so far in 2025. We're going to come back, ribbon it with Ryan. You want to get in, you can. 410-583-1057. Talk about the baseball playoffs. Who does Ryan like tonight? Seattle and Detroit and the Blue Jays. Any stop in Toronto? Going to be well-rested waiting for the ALCS.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But here is Mike Elias talking about the Orioles, the managerial search, and what the criteria is, and do you have to be experienced, Jimi Hendrix?
I think experience, when you go into any type of hiring process, experience is overwhelmingly a big positive. In our particular situation, I think it'll definitely carry a lot of weight given all the factors that you just described. If you look at history, it is not a requisite for success, managerial success, and it's not necessary, and nor does it guarantee the success. So kind of like I said earlier, it'll all be weighed in the portfolio of the candidate and their other perceived strengths and areas of lacking.
So what, essentially, paraphrasing, exactly. I know what Mike's trying to say. I mean, paraphrasing all this is saying guys that have experience, that helps, right? You know, guy that's been around, it helps. If you've been a manager before, of course that helps, but it's not the end all as well, because if you've been around the game for a long period of time and then you get an opportunity, you can have success. It's been around baseball for a very long period of time. I think one thing that all fans are wondering, and Nolan, I think you have made this point, is the Orioles, the expectations are there. You feel like something has to change, and someone that has a track record of winning, I think the fan base would feel more comfortable with, right? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think a majority of the fans are pretty dead set on that veteran experience. Now, the one thing I will agree with Elias there is that that can't be the end-all be-all, right? I mean, there's plenty of experienced candidates out there. You know, Bob just got done talking about Bob Melvin. Very experienced, maybe more experienced than any other candidate or serious candidate.
He's
out
won
there.
How many Manager of the Year awards? I mean, he's achieved things, right? Individually.
Resume is very robust and very strong, but that doesn't make him the best candidate for the job. And I think most people would agree that his recent track record is pretty lackluster with teams that were built or teams that were paid to win. So it can't be exclusively one way or the other. Mm-hmm. You have to find that ideal, perfect candidate. I've been kind of saying through the whole process, I don't know if there is that slam dunk candidate or a slam dunk hire. To me, Bruce Bochy, if he wants to keep managing, would be the closest thing to that. But even then, there's faults with him, I suppose.
I think it all comes back to whoever's going to be at the helm of your team creates accountability, responsibility, continuity, and a belief that can raise your team's level when things aren't going right. And people can look all around baseball. We know when guys can control or can take over a room, can take over a organization and have that type of impact. I'm not saying that the Orioles need that rah-rah guy, but they need someone running this that the players can go to bat for each day, and that when things go wrong, you can tell that the players are going to continue to find a way. This past year, you could watch on the field so much, you know, and this, I know this is not exactly what the Orioles are thinking inside, but when you look at them, you looked at a group that didn't have confidence at time, guys that look lost, look disheveled, and they could say, oh, we're putting in the work. There's no doubt I know that they're putting in the work, but that continuity that they were looking for on the field and that belief was not there. We all know those moments. I've been on teams like that where we've done everything which way and we just can't find a way to win. And people could watch, and I remember after, it was my last year in Norfolk where we lost a lot of games. So the big league team in 2021, worst team in baseball. And I remember someone said to me, you just look like you guys are miserable. And we were. Doesn't mean we weren't working, but the point where I'm going with this is you need a manager that comes in that can check you at the door and make sure that we got to get this right. We don't have another circumstance. In the Orioles' this case, they had 3 months of just ominous doom and gloom, and they had maybe a month and a half of, oh, there's glimmer of hope. You can't have that next year.
And we talked about earlier, the 2023, or times change, like the end of the Philly season, they're not going to have that group together. 2023, you look at the lineup in the playoffs against the Rangers, a lot of those guys are gone. And some have decreased in performance, but we talk about doom and gloom and fundamentally, but they sucked fundamentally this year. The last Brandon Hyde game was like watching pre-Kelly League Bad News Bears. I mean, it was bad, which may help lead to his ouster. Where did the disconnect, where was the energy? Mr. Splash, they were like a fun team to watch, and everyone, ELE, became a team that was like they were going to the dentist office every day. Where was the leadership? Was there a disconnect between Hyde and the players? There's got to be more to it than just injuries, The injuries were a major part. Nobody's denying that, but there's a lot of layers, it seems, to why this thing went pear-shaped.
And that's why I think it's deeper than just a manager, right? You have to nail the manager higher, but if I'm looking for qualities beyond experience and, you know, maybe a World Series ring or whatever they have there, I'm looking for somebody who's going to not just get the best out of these guys on the field, but quite frankly, help them mature in their career and maybe develop one of these core pieces, Gunnar Henderson, into a true team leader. You don't have to be Adam Jones. Nobody's Adam Jones. His own personality was his own player. But Gunnar Henderson's a great player in his own right. Okay? He certainly has all the tools and gifts on the field. But what can he do to take his career to the next level and be a more vocal clubhouse guy? To be in connection with your manager? To be someone who's, I don't say policing the guys, but you know what I mean. Like, you can't just have the manager lay down the law all the time. These guys have to hold themselves accountable. And I think that's been the one thing that's really missing from this team, in addition to the fact that they bring in a few veteran players every year and then they ultimately seem to disappear at the trade deadline or they don't stay beyond a year. There isn't much incentive to cultivate a veteran presence through free agency or trades. So you need your own guys to then step up and become the veterans. We're how many years into this? For the Adleys, the Gunners, and even the Westbergs at this point, it's time to start taking that next step. You're no longer being judged based on what you do on the field. That stuff matters most, but it's time to start maturing and taking that next step in your career, becoming real leaders.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, too, and I agree, right? You need someone when things go wrong, because here's the reality. You could have the perfect chemistry, and you could have the team that's a championship-caliber team. You will fail during the season. It's a guarantee. And you want to go back for Orioles fans, we want to go way back before my time, but I know the story because I had some people involved with that team that I know personally. 1983, the Orioles had, what, 2 8- or 9- game losing streaks?
Yeah.
It's not about the losing. It's how do you bounce back when things go wrong? And for this young Orioles team, that has been the Achilles heel. When things went wrong, it spiraled. And when it spiraled, it wasn't a guy stepping up and making a big play to help you get out of it. And I give them credit in 2024. They scratched and clawed to try to get their way, but you know who helped them? Every fifth day, a guy named Corbin Burns, at least being on that staff, brought some confidence. You need more guys when things aren't going right that can instill that, hey, it's going to stop here. And if it's not, we're going to get this right eventually. And Baltimore's got to find that this next year.
We'll come back. Rockabacco, MassetSports.com. Get his thoughts on what's going on with the Orioles this offseason. All the arbitration eligible guys. And there's a lot of them for sure. And talk about the playoffs. As the Toronto Blue Jays, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Nolan, you've heard me say it to the point you're probably like, Bob, shut the bleep up. A year from now, the Orioles are going to be doing what the Blue Jays are doing now. Last year's Blue Jays or this year's Orioles? I'm even confusing myself.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Around with our next guest. He is on the Window Nation guest hotline from MassinSports.com. Rockabacco, Rock, good afternoon. How are you feeling today?
All right, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right.
Doing good.
Just talking about the arbitration eligible guys for the Birds, and there's a lot of them, and you wrote about it a couple of days ago on Masson. One guy in particular, Ryan Mountcastle, home run production has dwindled, injuries have mounted, could be looking at a $1 million raise, apparently, according to MLB trade rumors. Put the Rockabacco crystal ball to work. Where's Ryan Mountcastle going to be in about 4 months here?
Injuries mounted. I see what you did there.
Got it.
You know, it's yeah, I hate to say for sure because it's a lot of speculation, obviously, but I could certainly see the Orioles moving on. Now, they could go ahead and try and make a deal before they have to tender him a contract. They could tender him a contract, then try and make a deal. I think they love to check around. I think there is a market for him. I don't know how high the value, but there is a market where you could try and get something back for him. But, you know, at this point, with what the raise would be, and everybody gets a raise at arbitration, doesn't matter what kind of season you had, you're going to get a raise. And you're right, the home run production down, and it was supposed to improve what the Wall move did, but also it's just been injuries every season, and usually more than one. But there's always been something that stalled his progress, and he can't seem to get on a roll. And now that you've got, if you're really going to give Kobe Mayo that chance to be a primary first baseman, and you've got Samuel Basayo, who when he isn't catching and they want to keep him in the lineup, he'd play first. I just don't think there's a spot now any longer, even with Ryan O'Hearn gone. So I think they will definitely check. And there's been a market in the past. There have been teams that have been poking around the deadline. The Orioles, I think, have made it pretty clear to other teams in the past that he's been available. I think they will try to go ahead and do something where they can move him to get something in return.
Well, Rock, great chatting with you. And I agree, the Mountie situation is going to be one to monitor. I think with the position players, if we stick in this category, one thing that fans are going to probably want to know is how this outfield is going to continue to play out. We've talked about it quite a bit on the show in the past. It feels like to me Dylan Beavers should have an opportunity to be out there to play. It looks like Colton Cowser right now would have the first crack at being the center fielder, and Tyler O'Neill more than likely will opt in. It makes sense, right? But it feels incomplete, Rock. It feels like there's a lot more holes there. The infield, to me, it's pretty self-explanatory of who's going to get the everyday at-bats. But how do you see this shaping out, and do you think that the Orioles would go back to the well and look for a veteran that's out there on the open market?
Absolutely. They're going to be looking to bring in an outfielder, a bat, a leader, because that seems to be the one spot, even with the guys you name where it starts to seem a little crowded. I feel like that's the area where you could go ahead and add somebody and kind of rotate guys around, give Tyler O'Neill more time off to try and keep him healthy through a season, or at least most of it, because the infield does seem pretty set at this point, and you don't have room for another catcher, even if they carry three. So I feel like it's got to be outfield. And with Cowser, I thought he played a really good center field, at least it passed the eye test for me. But I have talked to some people in the organization who think that their best defensive alignment has him in left, mm-hmm. which could put them in the market to bring in a center fielder, even if it's on a short-term type deal until Enrique Bradfield Jr. is ready. But that still gives you now, that would be four outfielders just from the three you mentioned, who I feel like have to be on the club. And then, you know, you bring in a fourth guy. But I feel like they're going to go ahead and try and make a move. And that would be where you could try and bring in a big bat, somebody that maybe can carry this club a little bit when other guys are slumping, which is inevitable. And a leader, like a Nelson Cruz-type veteran guy that can help you. I don't think it's fair that this young core is being expected, hey, it's time for you guys to lead now. I mean, that's fine if these guys, you know, are able to do that for the even younger guys. But I think it's asking a lot for the Jordan Westbergs and the Jackson Holidays, the Colton Cowsers and guys like that to suddenly be the guys who, you know, call the team meeting and everybody comes to them to look for guidance. They need a real true veteran-type leader, and obviously somebody that's a productive bat, too. This person's got to be able to hit as well. So I think they're definitely going to be looking at outfielders, and if it's not free agency, then you look on the trade market. With the draft and the guys that they got back during the trade deadline, you can start packaging some younger players to bring in, whether it's a veteran starter or a veteran bat or both.
Yeah, I mean, I think we learned this past year that as much excitement that you have with young guys, there are so many different outcomes. And a lot of guys are going to have the growing pains, which many of the Orioles have had, especially their young players over the last couple of years. I mean, maybe except for like a Gunnar Henderson, who just, even on a down year, still made such positive strides defensively. But I'm with you. I think they need a bopper in the middle of the order. They need another veteran guy in the lineup there. But also, Rock, they are going to need some more starting pitching, because this end of last year almost was an audition for the staff of who are guys you know you could staple and lock in. I think ones that I would pencil in or Sharpie in if they're healthy for me was Kyle Bradish, Dean Kramer, and Trevor Rogers, right? And then depending if Tyler Wells, if they want him to be the guy. But we found that out that they're going to need more. And I think the Orioles, guys like Cade Povich, there's some upside, but there's a lot of question marks. Where do you think the Orioles could go here, whether it's free agency, which is still very unpredictable, giving out money as we've seen, or do you think that they're going to really look at the trade market?
I mean, they're going to look at both, but I've always said that it seems like it's a lot easier to make the deal where you can package some of your prospects and make that trade so it's out of the player's hands. So it can't be, I'd rather play closer to home, or I might be able to get more money over here. You go out and you make the trade, and you have to have what appears on paper to be too many starters, because it never really is. Because if you also factor in Grayson Rodriguez, I mean, we just named five guys right there, and we're not even counting somebody coming in from the outside, and they have stated that Tyler Wells right now, they view him as a starter. So you're going to have five guys there, and that's not counting Povich or Brandon Young or somebody from AAA that might be knocking on the door. But you still have to go out and get at least one starter, because you just don't know with injuries, the guys that have options, if they struggle and you can send them down. And never, you just never have enough. You never have too many starters. And especially now if they do want Wells to be a starter. So I think they're going to go out and try and bring in at least one for like that top third, whether it's a one or two or a three, because Bradish is a legit one. Trevor Rogers, the way he pitched, would be a good two, but how deep would a rotation be if you bump him to three and slot somebody between Bradish and him? And then, yeah, Kramer, Wells, they're going to go look. They're going to try check the trade market. They'll look at free agency. And if it's too expensive, then, you know, you're better off trying to package some of these guys, like I said earlier, whether it's draft picks that you just got or if it's, you know, some of these young guys that you got during the deadline where they traded, what, nine guys away or whatever. Try to package. Talk to the Mariners, talk to the Marlins, talk to the usual suspects and see if there's a top type of rotation starter that you can bring in.
Rockabacco, MassetSports.com, Bob Haney, Ryan Ripken. Unfortunately, we have to end this one on a sad note. Craig Heiss passed away. The news coming down today. The Orioles just sent out an official acknowledgement of Heisey's passing. I know, Rock, you've known him for a long, long, long time. I mean, it's a tough spot to be in for sure. 2025 just sucked in this particular area. But what about Heisey, man?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, one of those things you just don't expect it. I was driving. I had a missed call from Stan Charles, and I got a text from somebody, and word spread quickly. My phone's been blowing up all day, and it's just – he was kind of a staple, and not just Orioles. I know there are guys covering the Nationals that have told me that they're just gutted by this news. I mean, I've known him since I started on the beat, and we had so much fun with him. Mike Mussina used to joke with him all the time. You know, Heiss was known for, instead of an opening question, it would be more of a statement. And Mussina would call him out on it every time. Craig, that's not a question. That's not a question, Craig. And we'd laugh, and then he'd go ahead and answer it. Just a very lovable, fun guy who did a great job on radio, and just somebody who, you know, you're just used to seeing around all the time at both ballparks. It's going to be very strange without him. I said his timing, you waited till they were the last game in the old press box and waited for the Yankees to get eliminated. Two perfect things. So I'm going to picture him being with Henny now, Joe Strauss cackling at him and going back and forth with him like he always did. But yeah, it's a very, very sad day for this beat crew.
Rock, appreciate the time. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, pal.
There's Rockabacco, everybody. Yeah, Craig Heiss passing away unexpectedly last night. So one of our colleagues here in the Baltimore sports media gone and, you know, to a new dimension. Let's get out to the phones. Let's go to Towson and get PT. PT, what's up?
Hey, guys. Love the show. I was wondering if you guys were thinking – I'm on board with what Bob has been saying. I think Bob's the only one that's been saying it, actually, is that we could end up dealing Mayo and keeping Mountcastle, and then you look at it, you're going to want a lot of left-handed sticks at first anyway. So I don't know that Mountcastle is going to get more than 300 at bats anyway, because you want Basayo down there facing the majority of the right-handers, which is the majority of the at bats. So I can see that. I was wondering if you guys were thinking, as I am, that Jeremiah Jackson is a likely candidate to be dealt as well.
Hey, thanks, PT.
Yeah, thanks, PT. I would say I don't think Jeremiah Jackson would. I think that he would be the super utility. And like we just saw, even though Orioles fans really valued Ramon Urias, and like those guys matter to a team, it's not one that would move the needle for an organization to go get him. Like when you talk about a guy like Kobe Mayo, that makes more sense. Why? Because of the plus power that he possesses, and people look at, well, what could he be for the next 5 to 10 years? Oh, this guy could hit 30 plus home runs. I don't think that anyone's looking at Jeremiah Jackson as that type of sequence. And I'm trying to like think back to a guy that went under the radar for a lot of years, been around for a long time, but like Justin Turner was a guy that people overlooked, you know, was an Oriole for a hot minute, right?
Cup of coffee.
But then, you know, ends up latching on with the Dodgers, really good hitter, but it took a long time. Like, could Jeremiah Jackson get to a point where he's an established, really good big league hitter? Yes. But I just don't know right now if his value is going to be too high. But the Mountcastle thing will be interesting. They got to make a choice, Bob.
Either Mayo's a guy whose value is still high enough to swing a trade for a Luis Castillo or a Pablo Baez in Minnesota, depending. Or, I mean, maybe they can move Gilbert or Kirby to Seattle. Who knows? Or, you know, is he going to be the next 35 home run masher homegrown, and him and Basayo combined for 60 home runs a year at first base?
Yeah, I mean, my feeling is that the Orioles will want to take the guy they have more team control over, and that would be Kobe Mayo. But if you're talking about who has more value right now in a deal, it's no doubt Kobe Mayo, because you're buying, if Ryan Mountcastle becomes available, you're trying to buy low and buy that he's going to have a comeback. But it's not going to get us. Teams aren't going to risk a top piece for an inconsistent and, unfortunately, injury-prone Ryan Mountcastle.
All right, Ryan Ripken, before we let you roll, we get to Nolan's Funhouse here. Ravens getting 7.5 at home against the Rams. I said 38-13. Nolan, you went
31-21,
both in favor of L.A.
Yeah.
I know you're wearing your Ravens hoodie because it is on television. Right now.
No, I mean, look, I got L.A. winning this. I'd like to maybe it comes down where it's a close game in the fourth quarter. This is what I'm hoping. I just want anything else than what happened last week. I want to see some fight. I want to see that there's that. Fight's the only word I can think of. There's that fight, and you're battling, you're scratching and clawing. Rams are just the better team right now, and I think that's how it's going to be. But I just want to see that deep into the ball game, or at least into the third quarter. You know, let it be a game in the third quarter, and you know, crazier things have happened. But they can use that. They need to build off of something here. But I think the Rams are going to be too much.
What do you got there, Nolan?
Not much here. You're just here from the people.
Let's get Zane.
Quick Draws Funhouse.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
105.7 The Fan.
First one here says, John Harbaugh has his fingerprints all over this defense, not just Orr and Pagano. That's why he's so defensive about his DC. He has zero to do with the offense, always has been a zero in that area, so he's churned through OCs all the time during his tenure as a head coach.
Well, look, you've been around long enough, you're going to get the brunt of it. And when you're the head guy, Nolan, right, things go wrong, it's going to be on you. But this whole thing, it's a lot deeper than that. John Harbaugh, the blueprints all over this. But what I do think that they need to figure out, and we mentioned it earlier in the show, the communication, it's really the breakdowns constantly with this defense. This group, even injury plagued, is better than what they put on the field. That is what needs to be fixed here. And if it's not, the reality is people will start to lose their job. And if it's a bad year for the Ravens, going back to the last time that they were, 1-3, 1-4, whatever it was, for their worst start, or one of their worst starts in franchise history, you know, some changes could be made.
Speaking of the defense, this texter says, Ravens should go all-out blitz on every snap. What does it matter anyway? You're not going to stop the Rams straight up. They'll pick you apart with death by paper cuts if they keep sitting back in zone coverage. Zach Orr's job is on the line. I'd like to see him go down swinging.
I would like to see... I don't have the right answer. I just would like to see something different than what they've had. If blitzing helps guys not be in the wrong place at the wrong time, the zone coverage, as we've seen it, there's just someone that gets to that free space. No one's getting home. If that's a way to put pressure, Bob, I think we could live with it. But I'll say on the other side, I don't really love the idea of Davante Adams and Puka Nacua having one-on-one opportunities there. That looks like if the Rams, with McVay and Stafford, they'd figure that out pretty quickly.
And we can do the death by paper cuts. I could still see Stafford taking shots down the field with Adams and Tutu Atwell. all set.
Oh, yeah, right. For sure.
Little bombs away.
I think that strategy, actually, if this is somehow a close game in the fourth quarter, that's when I would go implement all-out blitz. Mm-hmm. Because that's when the Rams are going to kill you, and they can line it up and, oh, we're just going to we can have an eight-minute drive here, no problem. Because the Ravens are just going to sit back and play prevent. We'll just go, you know, 5 yards here, another couple here. We might even mix in a couple runs, who knows, and we'll just eat all this time on the clock and leave you with nothing.
Ravens win toss, you defer, you take the ball. I'm taking the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, we saw it last week. Defer, give up a touchdown, first drive, and all of a sudden, here we go again. Take the ball and do what you got
to
do.
You haven't even been in position to take advantage of that double-dip scenario going into halftime and then coming out. Right. I mean, they're finding themselves, the game's already over with a couple by the two-minute warning in the first half. So, yeah, I mean, anything you can do to get a lead, as unlikely as it is with this offense and this O-line right now, I don't hate that either. Last text here, Matt in New Orleans. Not happy, as you would imagine. Says, prediction time. Unfortunately, this will be Zach Orr's last game as the defensive coordinator of the Ravens. I know we want him to succeed for the betterment of the team, but the Rams will destroy a terrible Ravens defense with no fight. I don't care if the weather's going to be bad. It won't matter for the results. They can't stop the run. They can't stop the pass. And they just don't score. Prediction here, Rams 42, Ravens 17.
Ooh, I'm feeling that guy right there. 38-13. After 38, doesn't really matter. If the Ravens win, we'll all be happy to talk about it on Monday. But if they get blown out, like a lot of us anticipate, it's going to be a long week heading into the bye. And there could be some wholesale changes going on there. And do the Ravens become sellers as the trade deadline looms on November the 4th? Could Mark Andrews win his way at the door, for instance? Some of these expiring.
Save that for next week.
Save it for next week. We'll be back on Monday. Ryan, have a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
And I'll see you Sunday down at Horseshoe. Coming up next is Inside Access. Got Seattle and Detroit. Game 5, winner gets Toronto in the ALCS. For Vinny Serrato, Ryan Ripken, Nolan McGraw, I'm Bob Haney. Stay safe, stay healthy. Have a great weekend. Rest in peace, Craig Heist.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.